Welcome to Inclusion for All Radio, a podcast and story sharing series that seeks to represent the voice of the poor and vulnerable groups in Nigeria. Our aim is to highlight the barriers that keep the poor excluded and advocate for their removal. Inclusion for All Radio, amplifying voices unheard. Hello, it's the 12th episode of the Inclusion for All Radio podcast series, which is airing as the first in this new year, 2024. And speaking of new, something phenomenal, I dare say, happened in November 2023. Inclusion for All transitioned from its incubating organization into its permanent host at EFINA, and that's Enhancing Financial Innovation and Access, a financial sector deepening organization in Nigeria that has existed for over 15 years. I am Chinasa Collins-Ogbo, podcast host, and now the Inclusion for All Advocacy and Communications Lead at EFINA. So the first conversation for this year will look to shine light on one of the vital assets of EFINA, which is the Access to Finance Survey. In 2008, EFINA launched its first Access to Finance Survey in Nigeria, which was designed to analyze the use of financial services across informal and formal sectors, highlighting regulatory hurdles and providing credible data to drive innovation and inform policy reforms. Since then, EFINA has undertaken subsequent surveys biannually from 2010 to 2020 and recently in 2023. Significant progress has been made since 2008, when EFINA began measuring access to finance in Nigeria, with nearly 3 in 5 Nigerian adults financially included, and a notable decline in the proportion of adults reliant on informal financial providers. According to the 2023 EFINA survey, formal financial inclusion grew from 56% in 2020 to 64% in 2023. This was fueled by growth in the banked population and major gains in non-bank formal adoption. Despite this recent data, 2 in 5 adult Nigerians remain financially formally excluded. Reliable data is key to driving financial inclusion of the unbanked population, improving usage and quality of financial services, improving product design and marketing or segmentation, and guiding financial inclusion policies and strategies. EFINA's A2F surveys bridge the data gap and remain the primary source of financial inclusion data that's designed to assess access to use to and use of financial services for the adult Nigerian population. On this episode, where we're discussing utilizing data to accelerate financial and economic inclusion in Nigeria, I have Dr. Oluwatomi Oromosele, who is the A2F Research Lead and General Manager at EFINA. Welcome, Tomi. It's a pleasure to have you on the first episode of Inclusion for All Radio for 2024, and I'm looking forward to you sharing some of the key highlights of the 2023 A2F survey and how we can leverage it to broaden and deepen financial inclusion in Nigeria. Welcome.
Thanks, Chinasa. Thank you for having me. And kudos to you. Well done for the work you've done in the last couple of months. I'm happy to be here for the 12th episode. Thank you.
Yay, thank you. I'm excited as well to have you. And let me start on that high note. You know, we ended, now as a member of the EFINA team, we ended the year on such a great note, you know, launching the 2023 A2F data insights. And it was quite an interesting time for the ecosystem, which is something a lot of people have been looking forward to. And you know how I talk about the A2F survey being the Bible for the financial inclusion ecosystem. And so with that, I'd like you to start with sharing your thoughts on the highlights of the key findings from the 2023 survey, what they tell us about the current state of the economy and financial inclusion in Nigeria compared to previous years.
Thank you. So again, we're excited to have this data available in the ecosystem to drive decision-making, support not just regulators, but also the financial service providers to make better decisions that can help us drive financial inclusion. We're excited to report that in the last 15 years, and particularly the last launch, we've seen an improvement in formal financial inclusion in Nigeria. So over the last 15 years, we've been able to reduce the rate of formal exclusion by half for the Nigerian adult population. And in the last 3 years alone, between the last survey, which was done in 2020, and with the one we concluded last year, we've seen an 8% percentage point jump in formal financial inclusion. This is good progress, but we still see that approximately 40 million adult Nigerians remain formally excluded from formal financial services. And by that, I mean adult Nigerians, people who are above 18, who have no access to any formal regulated financial service providers. It means that these people are either relying wholly on informal financial service providers, like your Ajo, contribution here and there, your cooperatives, or they're completely relying on, you know, just saving at home, in their pockets, sticking their monies around them. So there's still so much that we need, so much that needs to be done with regards to driving financial inclusion.
Thank you, Tomi. Very comprehensive response there. Just to highlight, and for the sake of or benefit of those who sort of conflate financial inclusion and formal financial inclusion. So I know that there is financial inclusion as a whole. What does that comprise of, especially when you now make specific mention of formal financial inclusion? And, you know, what is more important? What is Nigeria driving?
Okay, great. So when we talk of financial inclusion, we talk about access to at the basis of that, we talked about access to both formal and informal financial service providers.
Okay.
So anyone who has access to, you know, an institution or a body that provides financial services, and by that I mean transfers, savings, credit, insurance, and all of that. But then there's also the awareness and the recognition that certain forms of offerings are more safe, efficient, and that's where regulation comes into play. So for the formal regulated providers, we know that institutionally, there are legal laws within the country that guides the financial service providers and how they serve the Nigerian public. And so the goal is that everybody has access to a formal financial service provider and are using formal services. We are fully aware that in our Nigerian context and in the African context generally, because of certain barriers, we have been more inclined to use informal providers. So because we're also more communal, right? We don't have access to formal providers. We're more likely to get together and make things work. So that is good. And so we cannot ignore that completely. And so we still continue to capture informal usage. But at the end of the day, the goal is that everyone has access to formal financial service providers. And so what we've reported is 64% of adult Nigerians have access to formal financial service providers, and an additional 10% of adult Nigerians, which is about 10 million or 11 million people, rely solely on informal financial service providers. So again, a significant bulk there that you cannot ignore.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tomi, for that clarification. And just to also add my own few thoughts to that. So basically, because we also understand that there's a population of people who don't actually engage with any form or financial services, right, to the excluded population. So there are people who are interacting, but not at the formal level. And for us to get to the level of inclusion that we feel is regulated and also provides a kind of protection for the consumers, then we want to move those people from the informal space into the formal space, right?
Yes.
Fantastic. Thank you, Tomi. So I'd like to then just ask what your opinion is on the main barriers to getting financial inclusion in Nigeria. And maybe we should say specifically formal financial inclusion, since that's where we want to go, as shown by the A2F survey results.
Yeah, Yes, I agree with you, and that's the goal, that everyone is formally included. Mm-hmm. And when we look at the data around some of the major reasons for exclusion, mm-hmm. At the base of this, like I mentioned, is access to a transactional account.
Right.
And the largest provider of that in the ecosystem are banks, right? So you ask yourself why, I mean, that's a widely used, why would anyone not have access to that? Mm-hmm. And currently, when we look at the data, the major reason why people say they don't have a bank account is little or irregular income. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've had one of our mentors who I know we both respect say to us once that really nobody wants a bank account.
Exactly.
They really want to be able to move money around, mm-hmm. receive money, send money. And if it's a bank that provides that, fine. If it's not a bank, then anybody who provides that at an affordable rate with easy access, mm-hmm. They are likely to take up that. So as it is today in Nigeria, also bearing in mind our current economic context, mm-hmm. The high rate of unemployment, inflation, nearly half of unbanked Nigerians mm-hmm. say that income challenge is the main reason why
they don't have a bank account.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And next to that, we have access. Mm-hmm. We also know that majority of unbanked Nigerians live in rural Nigeria, northern Nigeria, where access remains a challenge. Obviously, mm-hmm. the infrastructure, public infrastructure to support banking services in those communities are not there. When you talk about electricity, good roads, all of that really not available in rural and northern Nigeria. So people talk about access to banks as another major challenge. And then I think the third barrier that ranks as well is attitudes and perceptions. Early in 2023, we went through the Naira redesign, transition, whatever it was.
Yes.
Because
that whole
we never
moment.
Got to the point.
No, we didn't.
Yeah. But again, that did not help us with regards to trust mm-hmm. and perceptions
Absolutely.
About banks and whether we truly understand and feel the pains of the average Nigerian, what mm-hmm. they need, or understand what their challenges are. So mm-hmm. there's a perception about we don't know what the benefits of the banks are. We don't trust them. It's not fit for me. It's not the right, product for me, or they don't have services for me. It's not for people like me. So all of that attitude and perception barriers still continue to linger at the top of the list.
Awesome. And, as you mentioned these barriers and, not being someone that is new to the whole financial inclusion conversation and how long it's lasted, it's interesting to see that these barriers sort of continue to come up, and it also then highlights a need to do something. And maybe is it that we've been trying to do something and we're doing it the wrong way? And again, that supports why these surveys from EFINA, the Access to Finance Survey, is very important, because it speaks to the demand side challenges that different parties need to be aware of and to take the right action and use, sort of a strong data evidence based to provide solutions. So I'd like to then come to how you think that data, looking at the focus of the conversation today, how do you think the data from this survey can be utilized to foster innovation in financial services and products to better serve the Nigerian population?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I mentioned is mm-hmm. is income. And mm-hmm. When you say that, I mean, last week we were in a room with the insurance providers mm-hmm. and, they just could not understand how mm-hmm. that is the biggest barrier. And also the second thing they could not understand is how to design for them people who say, income is their major challenge.
Right.
It looks like they are two different worlds. Mm-hmm. It's about how do we still serve these people? So mm-hmm. it goes back to understanding them, understanding their needs, being able to segment the population, because we're not a monolith group, right?
Of course.
So that's what one of the major things that this data helps with.
Mm-hmm.
It helps you to really understand the Nigerian population,
yes.
understand their financial needs, mm-hmm. understand their preferences. What are they likely to use? What will be the barriers to the adoption
mm-hmm.
what are the use cases, you know, for driving usage of products. So I think one of the things that, you know, would encourage stakeholders to get on this data to take advantage of is understanding Nigerians and properly segmenting the market to be able to take advantage of that. So what that would help you understand not just, is also including the messaging, what kind of message will resonate with the particular segment of the population. The second thing is data is very, very useful for market sizing. So we know that currently we have a large MSME market. So large percentage of Nigerians are business owners. But what percentage of that are ready for adoption of products? What proportion of that are currently have access and maybe are, you know, low-hanging fruits that we can take advantage of? So this data, for example, can help financial service providers to really look into specific segments to size the market and then take advantage of the opportunities that exist there. The third one will be around product design. Again, better understanding can help you design products for each segment. I think on the regulatory side, I mean, one of the challenges we just pointed out there was income. That is beyond just the financial ecosystem. So it also points to regulators, the amount of partnership and handshakes, you know, that they need to do to ensure that the government, the subnationals also need to be part of the conversation around driving financial inclusion. It also tells us what is working, what is not working. These data, for example, we have geospatial information that also tells you how significant the access gaps are and how, you know, proximity, you know, low proximity to an access point, whether it's an agent location or a bank, is continues to be a key driver for financial exclusion. So all of these insights are available in data sets, and we encourage financial service providers, data analysts, regulators to, you know, come on board, and we're really ready to collaborate with them to use the data for improved decision making so that we improve the lives of Nigerians in the whole.
Fantastic. I like the call to action there. So this is where EFINA is asking all, you know, ecosystem actors that are passionate about this issue and want to contribute meaningfully to the system to use this data that's available to all to inform, you know, design of products and solutions so that we're actually really tackling the real problems as opposed to what we perceive or what we think the problems are. This is hard facts, you know, real numbers, as they say, numbers don't lie, that definitely inform how to solve for the problem. And everybody has a role to play. I like, Tommy, when you talked about when you got in that room with the insurance people and they couldn't understand the challenge of limited income or no income at all for these groups of people, because their own focus is to actually provide a protection for the future for something that you don't even have. And so you start to wonder, what, how do I solve for this problem that isn't mine? And that's where everybody needs to come together, right, to the table. And I like that the A2F data allows everybody have an aspect that speaks to where they need to address so that we have a collective solving approach. So awesome. So and just speaking on collaborations and coming together, you know, what are the opportunities that you see between different stakeholders, government, financial institutions, tech companies, you know, all the different actors? Do you see any specific ones that you can sort of quickly highlight?
Yeah, thank you, Chinasa. The truth is, you know, serving the unbanked Nigerians would take collaboration and partnerships from every stakeholder. So the two things. One is because we still have, like I've mentioned, 40 million unbanked. So to reach those people, there needs to be a lot of partnership. The banks, for example, yes, they've been able to serve about 52%, but to reach the unbanked, who we've said are rural northern Nigerians, we need technology. And so the banks need to collaborate strongly with the fintech providers, with the non-bank financial service agent providers, who are currently, we see them in the, I mean, very, very obvious in the last day, you know, data, really driving and extending formal access to formal financial services to unbanked Nigerians. Mm-hmm. So they need that kind of collaboration and partnership. And then the other reason why partnership is also important is because even for banked Nigerians, the depth of inclusion is still very, 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 very shallow.
You're right.
We still have credit at about 6% formal credit, insurance, 3% formal insurance. So it tells you that banks themselves also need to partner with the non-bank formal providers to improve and then, you know, just the offerings that they have for you know, for their customers. Because again, those, I think, and this is one of the things that we really want to advocate for this year, those are actually the services that improve the financial health and the well-being of Nigerians. Credit, for example, ensures that someone, you know, can take advantage of opportunities, whether it's education related or improving your business, or help you cope with shocks, whether that shock is related to your health or, you know, unforeseen incidents, climate, or, you know, all business failure, whatever it is, but that is really what helps beyond the ability to move money from one place to the other. So banks need to collaborate and partner to make that happen. And the other area where there also has to be collaboration is because whether we like it or not, our ecosystem has not really taking advantage of the use of data, right? Really catalyze growth, catalyze uptake and usage. And to be honest, everyone is still trying to learn, you know, as we go along. But collaboration is what's going to ensure that we, as an ecosystem, we're able to catalyze the opportunities that are available before us. So in terms of taking advantage of technology and analytics, there needs to be strong partnerships to help us achieve, you know, the outcomes that we want to see, at least within the short period of time.
Awesome, Tomi. And I couldn't agree more with you. So, yes, you're absolutely right. You know, when you want to, when you're thinking economic resilience and actually helping deepen financial inclusion, and in terms of the range of services that the people that we care about, who are the people in the bottom of the pyramid or the unbanked populations, need, then it's sort of that credit. But let me play the devil's advocate a little, right? And so sometimes, as you and I know, when the conversation about if people actually need a bank account, it's also looking at the from the supply side and looking at sort of the financial service providers, the resistance to wanting to extend credit to these groups of people. It's also that, which also goes both sides to the demand side in terms of the ask for too much information that I don't have to give me this loan. And then the bank is on the other side thinking these are risky assets and we don't want to have a large pool of unpaid loans or defaults, right? So where do we help to, you know, say bridge that gap, or how do we get to the point where both sides are sort of at a comfortable place, a middle ground where the beneficiaries don't feel like they're asking for too much information, and where the bank has a sense of comfort? And I think of a barrier in my head already. It's that my own the ID issue that I keep talking about. But I would like to hear from you how you think that a middle ground can be reached so that we can get more people using credit products.
Yeah, totally agree with you, Chinasa. So there are a couple of things. One is from a regulatory point of view, from an ecosystem point of view, there has to be the infrastructure that supports that. One of that is ID, and, you know, ID as well as the legal infrastructure to support that. Regulatory framework and all of that to support that. So the ecosystem, for example, needs to promote, yes, digital identity, and also, you know, ensure that access to data, you know, cuts across, multiple providers.
Right.
So that data sharing is mm-hmm. currently not there. And part of the reason why we don't have that is because the identity issue, which will harmonize all
Absolutely.
Of that and link that, is also missing. So there's an ecosystem infrastructure gap that needs to be filled. Mm-hmm. But then there's also the challenge of the gap in understanding. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons why financial service providers are not willing to lend is mm-hmm. also because they really do not very well understand
the market.
Market, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that we're hoping that data will help, but not just data, technology and advanced analytics
yes.
is already doing that. I mean, for so long, between 2010 or 2012 and 2020, we were still around 2% formal credit, 3% mm-hmm. formal credit.
Mm-hmm.
And you will agree with me that in the last 2 years, we've seen digital credit really, really grow yes. in the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we've kind of doubled that yeah. in 3 years, from 3% to now 6% formal credit.
Yeah.
And it's technology that has helped that. Now there's also the downside of that,
mm-hmm.
in terms of the riskiness of the investment mm-hmm. of the loans. And we are encouraging stakeholders again to use data to drive their offerings. Mm-hmm. Obviously, financial system stability is very much important to us. So we want Nigerians to have loans that will not cause them to be indebted. I want the market to be safe. So those two things, the infrastructure, the ecosystem challenge needs to be fixed. But then the providers as well need to, one, leverage data, leverage technology, leverage mm-hmm. partnership. Partnership is very important because we keep saying that we don't know these people, we don't know who they are,
yeah.
we can't serve them.
Mm-hmm.
But informally, people are using credit significantly.
Exactly.
Right? So, mm-hmm. The question is, there is a possibility of partnering
mm-hmm.
with the informal service providers who currently are the biggest providers of credit, not in terms of the value now, mm-hmm. but in terms of the number of people who they serve,
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
really meet the needs of those people. There are lessons from other climes where this has been done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that we would also try and do this year is as we report some of these numbers, draw some of those lessons. I think in India, for example, there's a rural program
mm-hmm.
that ensures that formal providers partner with the informal providers to serve credit.
Fantastic.
And I remember last 2 years ago,
yeah.
we did some research in focusing on women in agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And the women, you know, it was strange to us because
yeah.
they were willing to pay 5% monthly interest rate.
Can you imagine?
On
That's
their
exorbitant.
Loan from their informal providers,
mm-hmm.
but they were not willing to pay that amount to a formal provider.
Hmm.
Interesting. And the reason why is because, you know, they feel that when it comes to their informal provider, it's their own. They are part of it. They understand it completely.
Yes.
There are other gains that they get beyond just a transaction,
right,
one-off.
Right.
So in other words, by partnering, the mm-hmm. banks can still get their 2% or their 3%.
Exactly.
The informal providers can get their 2%, and then there's more credit that goes to the market.
Absolutely.
So
and we pull them into the formal sector. That's interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, I love that. Absolutely. Okay, so as we just come to a close of sort of rounding up this conversation, I think I'd like you to maybe highlight two or three action steps that you think should be prioritized, you know, building on the survey insights from the 2023 A2F that would further accelerate financial and economic inclusion in Nigeria.
Oh, great. I think there are two things that I would recommend that we focus on is that we look at exclusion
mm-hmm.
In terms of the groups that we prioritize the segments that are excluded.
Right.
The gaps with regards to female women's financial inclusion, mm-hmm, the mm-hmm. gender gap,
yes.
the gap between the North and the South, mm-hmm. it's too significant for us to ignore, to continue to ignore. Mm-hmm. Then for farmers, I'm particularly interested in farmers because I keep seeing that, you know, farmers are even doing sometimes worse off mm-hmm. than people who are dependent.
Yes.
So it's worrying to me because these guys are economically active.
Critical.
They,
mm-hmm.
they are engaging. So you just imagine how you feel like you're working, you're giving your best.
Yeah.
But there is little that, you know, you can get out of that. So if they're economically active, how do we make it work for them? And that's what the ecosystem should really be concerned about. There must be a way mm-hmm. to serve them at that at their level. And for me, what I will call for is an institutional rethinking about how we serve, you know, the agricultural space. So at Fantastic. Some point, mm-hmm. you remember businesses,
yeah.
MSMEs were not being served. And so we came out with microfinance,
mm-hmm.
really.
Yeah.
There should be another thinking around what kind of finance can serve the agri community.
You're right.
So I think we should think about that. Then the last thing I'll mention is I think that we need to deepen our inclusion mm-hmm. in Nigeria. We need to ensure that financial inclusion, we make finance work for people beyond just access to an account and being happy that, oh, they're making payments, the volume of payments is increasing. No.
Yeah.
The depth of inclusion with regards to access to credit, access to insurance, pension, you know, investments. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. People should have access to those things that actually leads to transformation in their livelihoods. And then ensure that the financial system is safe because there's a lot of things going on right
Absolutely.
Now that I don't think is continuing to help our trust factor. So
I know.
The safety of the financial
system. Very critical. Wow. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, Tomi. That was particularly enlightening. And I believe that everyone listening has a clearer sense of, you know, what the financial inclusion ecosystem is like in Nigeria, what needs to be done, what the barriers are. And I guess using that to inform how they can help and having access to the A2F data on the AFINA website and the A2F website as well. So you can check out the AFINA website to get more information and have access to the highlights of the reports that was published in 2023 December, and then look out for more data as we continue to churn them out in the next couple of months. So thank you so much, Tomi. I think it's fair to just sort of round this up saying that it's beyond access. Financial inclusion is beyond access. It's even about the usage of a range of financial service products that would then translate to sustainable economic transformation for individuals and even at a broader national level. Thank you so much, Tomi, for coming. It's been a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Thank you, Chinaza, for having us, and well done for all you do.
Thank you. So, on that note, Inclusion for All at AFINA continues to represent and amplify the voices of the populations we care about by weighing in on topical financial inclusion related issues using reliable data to advocate for the removal of the barriers that keep them excluded from formal financial services. Continue to listen to Inclusion for All Radio for reliable updates and conversations about Nigeria's financial inclusion landscape. Thank you. To learn more about the Inclusion for All Advocacy Initiative and to access more insightful data about financial inclusion for the marginalized groups in Nigeria, please visit our website, inclusion-for-all.org.